You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Tonight on Business Sense, we're diving deep into a story of bold culture, fearless entrepreneurship, and redefining African fashion on our own terms. If you think fashion is just about looking good, think again. It's about identity, heritage, and power. And no one embodies that better than tonight's guest. Meet Susana Apia, the mastermind between Adichie Efie Collections, a brand that's shaking up the fashion world by bringing authentic Ghanaian craftsmanship into the spotlight, with style that's as vibrant as the stories behind every stitch. This isn't just fashion, my people. It is culture you can wear, a statement you can make, and a movement you can be part of. Susana took the challenge of preserving tradition and turned it into a thriving business that supports local artisans, empowers communities, and puts African luxury on the global map. Tonight, we'll unpack how she's doing it, the highs, the hurdles, and the heart behind Adichie Efie. Susana, welcome to Business Sense. I am so ready to hear your story, and I know my guests are keen to hear from you as well. How are you doing this evening?
Hello, good evening. I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Let's talk about the moment you realized you wanted to create Adichie Efie Collections. And you, can you hear me say the thing like I'm a true Ghanaian? Please give me props. What inspired you?
It hasn't been easy. God has been good.
What inspired you to blend traditional Ghanaian artistry with contemporary fashion? Was there a defining experience perhaps that lit that fire within you?
Okay, first of all, I want to say thank you for this opportunity, and I'm saying hello to all my listeners.
Hello.
I'm a Ghanaian.
Yes.
And an African as well. And so when it comes to Ghana, we have our cultures and our traditions. We blend them together.
Mm.
And so kente crafting is one of our traditional clothes that we put on.
Mm.
And so as a Ghanaian, I decided to enter into it, design and sell to other people, for other people to see what Ghanaian we put on and what we have.
Yeah, what is it that inspired then you starting this business? I mean, you could have just decided to tailor clothes for yourself and to represent your culture as a single person or singular entity. What inspired you to actually then design clothing for other Ghanaians to wear and possibly other Africans too?
Well, I think that I was also thinking about what I could get from selling and then branding myself. That is money,
mm.
The capital. It's one of the motivations that keeps me going.
Okay. I love that honesty, because a lot of people will tell you, oh, I'm solving a problem, which is great because every business ought to. But I love the honesty to say, listen, I just needed the money.
Yeah.
And how's it been working out? Tell me about your first client that said, hey, I want this and I want to pay for it.
Oh, it hasn't been easy.
Yeah.
There are a lot of clients that give us problems. Some will choose their designs. When you do it for them, they will come out and say that they don't like the combination.
Oh, no.
Others too will be gladly embrace it when you do it for them. But it's all part of the business. It keeps us going. It puts us on our toes, and then we try to add up different designs each and every day just to blend the colors for others.
Yeah. And walk me through the creation process. Do you source this material? Do you put it together? Do you get fabric and paint on it? Talk to us about the creation of these clothing.
So we actually have threads that we use. I don't do the designing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have weavers that weave for me. I just tell them I want this design, and then they work it for me, and then it comes out perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, right. What I've come to learn is Adishi Efie means home of blessings. How does this philosophy shape everything that you do, from the design choices to your business practices?
Well, Adishi in our culture means royal.
Tell us more.
I come from a royal family.
Oh, and so Susanna.
I chose the name Adishi Efie Collection.
Yeah.
Meaning that the fabrics that I sell, they are for royals. So everybody that's worth it, you become a royal automatically.
Mm.
That's the brain behind my name, the Adishi Efie Collection.
And who helps you with running the business? Talk to us about the team that does all of this work.
I have a lot of workers. I have like 7 people who do the designing for me.
Mm.
I have someone who does the IT work for me. I have sales persons who does the selling for me. I'm actually a nurse.
Oh,
and
a
so
nurse?
This one is a side job for me, yes.
Okay. Now we need to really unpack this. You are a nurse by day and you run this business by night, I assume. Susanna?
Hello.
Did you catch that?
Hello?
So how long have you been running the business?
It's been 7 years.
Oh, okay. I think I interrupted your thought there about the people who work in the organization.
Please, can you come again?
I think I interrupted your thoughts as you were telling me about the different people you have in your organization.
Okay, so I have people who do the crafting for me.
Mm.
And then I do the designing myself.
Okay.
I have IT personnel who does my internet things for me.
Mm.
I have sales personnel. And then I also work as well.
Yeah. And how are you finding that balance? I know for a lot of entrepreneurs, it can get very tricky if you also have a 9-to-5. How are you managing that? How are you towing that line or balancing all of that?
It's not easy, my dear. Sometimes if you don't take care, the weavers will take your money. They'll not weave the thing for you. When you go, they will run away. You have to think, client and all stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can imagine. And as you're saying, it's not smooth sailing. It's not easy, right? What are some of the biggest obstacles? What are some of the biggest obstacles you faced in starting the collection 6-7 years ago? And how did you overcome them without losing sight of what your vision was?
Well, I think there are lots of customers who would want you to weave for them before they make payment. And then after investing in their crafting, they will come out and say, I don't even need this again.
Mm.
Then your money will be taxed unless you sell them before you get your money back. But at times, I keep telling myself that if you love what you do, you don't look at the obstacles. You just move forward.
Yeah.
And so that keeps me going. Yeah.
So talk to us, because for me, fashion and nursing are two different worlds. Is there one that is a passion of yours and one that just pays the bills, or are both a passion of yours and you're just expressing yourself differently in both these companies or these careers, rather?
They are both my passion.
Yeah.
I love business a lot. And the nursing is a calling that even if when I die and I come back, I'll still be a nurse. It's my passion.
Uh-huh.
I don't joke when it comes to my nursing aspect.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to business too, I don't joke with it at all.
Yeah. Your brand emphasizes ethical sourcing and uplifting local artisans, like you so rightfully mentioned. Can you share how these relationships work and why community empowerment is so important to you?
I think that we have to be portraying what we have for others to see. Because somewhere last 2 months, I had a foreigner who came in to buy something for me.
Mm.
She's not even in Ghana. She's from Kilimanjaro or somewhere. And then she said she saw my post on Instagram and she said to purchase it. And when she had the cloth, she was really happy. She said she hadn't seen some before.
Yeah.
So it means that I have sold my country to that person.
Yeah.
Because she started to read about Ghana, what we have and what we do. And I think that all these things that we are doing, we are pushing our country to other countries to see what we have.
Yeah. And what do you think makes your garments stand apart? Because I'm pretty sure there's so many other Ghanaians selling clothing. What makes your brand stand out?
The price differences. I always want to make my prices very cheap for everyone to purchase. For everyone to purchase, whether the poor, the middle, or the rich, everyone can purchase.
Yeah.
And I love working for everybody.
When you mention cheap prices, I can't help but think of your Shein and your Temu. And I know that they are running or sustainable because of scale, right? There are a lot of people who buy from those, who buy from those companies to, well, different companies selling through Shein and Temu. And so they can afford to sell things for cheap. So how are you making a profit when you're selling your things for cheap? Talk to us about your business model and how you're able to turn a profit from low prices.
So I had a Nigerian friend who advised me that if you have five clients coming to your shop and you get a profit of one CD from each person, you have five CDs. But you have just a client and you have a profit of two CDs, you have lost three clients. So it is better for you to reduce your prices to get more clients than making it higher and then getting none or one.
Yeah.
So I decided to adapt that, and I think it has helped me a lot. I have reviews of people coming back because of the cost of my fabric.
And talk to us about the ballpark figure about these garments. Do you just sell fabric alone, or because when I hear collection, I think of a range, right? Maybe seasonal range, or you're launching based on a theme or whatever's going on. So are you just selling fabrics, or are you selling clothing that use the fabrics that you guys create?
So currently, I am selling only the fabric.
Okay.
But I have a cousin who does the designing, like sewing. And so most of the time, I refer my clients to them, and she's very good. She does it perfectly for them,
Yeah.
But for me, I only do the selling of the fabrics.
And talk to us about your clients' acquisition. How are you getting these clients? Because I'll be very honest, I'm used to online businesses, right? And online businesses look like you have a funnel that you take people through, you give them a free something, you upsell them to the next thing and the next thing. And so for the kind of business that I know and run, it's all happening online and it's all through a funnel. There's literally little to no finger lifting on my side. So how does client acquisition work for you? What does it look like? How do you get customers in the door?
Well, most of the times I get customers through referrals from other people who have purchased goods from me. And I also have Instagram account, Facebook account, TikTok account that I post my fabrics, and then people also purchase through those pages as well.
Yeah. And when you started the company, what how did you raise funding for it? Did you bootstrap? Was it a case of Shark Tank? I don't know if you've got a version of Shark Tank in Ghana and what that would look like. How did you raise funds for your business in the beginning?
Well, I used my allowance. In nursing, after school, they give us some allowance money. So I used that one to start the business.
Yeah.
And then as time goes on, the business has kept growing by itself, small, 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 and now God has made it big for me.
You know, there's a question I didn't ask you about why fashion? Because initially you said that the reason you started the business was in order for you to make money, but you can make money in so many other ways. Why fashion?
Well, I love fashion a lot. Those who know me know that I like fashion a lot.
Okay.
I love fashion, and so sometimes what I wear, people want to purchase what I wear. So I decided that, okay, then let me start selling so that when I wear it, it will be like advertisement.
Yeah.
Then I started doing it small, small, and now we are going and going higher.
So it sounds like you are the billboard for your company. So is it safe to assume that the clothing you wear are predominantly from the cloths that you sell, or do you have also a mix of your things from your, and I don't know what the equivalence of Mr. Price is in Ghana, or the equivalence of Zara and H&M is, or if those stores are in your country. What does your fashion sense look like? If you could describe it to me, because we are talking audibly and I don't get to see. So if you could just describe your fashion sense to us, what would it sound or look like?
So I like putting on our traditional clothes, like the kente, the northern kente. I prefer that one to the casual wears and those stuff. So most of the time, people see me and they'll be like, hey, when you're getting married, what will you wear? Because I always put on kente. And that is what I sell.
Yeah.
And it's a form of advert for me. Yeah.
Mm, And I'm interested now in how you strike the balance between honoring traditional craftsmanship, honoring your culture that you wear, but also appealing to modern global markets. Are there any tensions or surprises in that journey? Are people like, this is not modern enough? Or can they decide to modernize the traditional cloth that you sell? How do you strike that balance?
It hasn't been easy. Sometimes you go to a program and then you will be in your traditional cloth, and your own Ghanaian people will be in their casual wear, and then they'll be looking at you that way. As if you are coming in as a queen or something.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating sometimes, but I feel that I am working out on what I sell, and so I want people to see my brand. So most of the times when I'm going for business meetings and other things, I want to be in what I sell, just for people to see that this is what I do.
Yeah. And how do you generate, what does your idea generation look like for the designs on the cloth?
So most of the times I look at other people's designs, and then I generate ideas from what they have. And then I add what I also have to it. And I also have a team that we also sit down and then we design on new things that we want to bring out.
Yeah. I got you. What's the most surprising thing about entrepreneurship that you encountered that you were absolutely not prepared for 7 years ago?
Relative to who would want the fabrics for free, close friends who would want it for free.
How?
But when they are purchasing it from other people, they want to pay. Yeah, it's very challenging. If they are buying it outside, they will pay. But if it is you, they want it for free. And it's very challenging.
And about running an organization, that is so unfair. Like, what do you mean? I'm trying to run a business here. I'm trying to make money. What do you mean?
That's our country, because an auntie will walk into your shop. She wants the fabric for free. Meanwhile, if you don't have and she's purchasing it from someone, she would pay. But when it is yours, because you are family, she doesn't want to pay. She wants this for free.
Yeah.
That's a big challenge that sometimes I really face.
And in terms of just the operations, do you believe you had an entrepreneurship bone in you? And let me give you a bit of a story, right? So I started my business about 5-6 years ago, and I was a corporate girly through and through. And I was running this business while I was working in corporate, and I was convinced that, listen, you are meant for this thing. Go on ahead and do it. And then I did. And then I realized, maybe you're not an entrepreneur. You know, there's just some traits and qualities in me that just don't qualify me to be an entrepreneur, because honestly, no, I'm a corporate girly. And so how have you found yourself as an entrepreneur? Do you find traits that work very well for you as a nurse seeping through into your entrepreneurial journey? Are you an entrepreneur?
Yes, please.
Okay. What makes you believe that?
Oh, I believe I am an entrepreneur.
Ah.
I believe I am an entrepreneur. Yeah.
And what makes you believe
but
that?
Day in and day out, I try to push harder wherever that I am, I want to go further.
Yeah.
I want to add up new things to what I do. I want to employ other people as well. And then I see myself that some days to come, I'll be a great entrepreneur that people will be looking for me.
Yeah. Susanna, what was the biggest or maybe the first big risk you took as a business owner?
Okay, so I had to purchase some threads from Togo to Ghana. And then the customer that I was buying the threads from, I didn't know him. And then he said I had to pay before he sends the goods. It was like 50,000 Ghana cedis.
Okay.
Which was risk. All my friends were saying, don't send. I said, I will send it. Business is, risk is part of business, so let me send it. I sent the money, and then about 2 to 3 months, I wasn't hearing from the guy.
Ah!
I could call him. He wasn't answering. And I don't even know where he stays in Togo, so I can't go there and go and arrest him. Somehow, I think 4 to 5 months after, that was then he delivered the goods.
Yo. Had you already written off that amount?
I tell you, I was, my BP was running higher and higher.
Of course, of course.
It's not easy, business. It's not easy. It's been ups and downs, but they are all part of the business. We keep pushing ourselves.
What lessons did that first year of running the collection, what lessons came from that first year? I mean, 7 years in, I know you've grown. I know you've evolved. But let's go back to that first year where you were still figuring things out, still figuring out supply chain and all of those things. What are the biggest lessons that came out of that year?
So I learned that if you want to do business with someone, you have to get trust from the person.
Oh.
Like, you know the person, where their supplies are coming from. You know them. You know that the goods are of quality before you invest. Because you could send money to someone, then the goods will come. They'll be inferior. You can't sell it. So now, before I will purchase anything, the person knows that me, if it is inferior, I'll bring it back. And so the person won't give me inferior. He or she will give me the quality ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you made any expensive mistakes that turned out to be a blessing? When initially you were just like, what did I just do? But later you're like, I'm glad I did that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have some clients outside the country. Sometimes they will tell you, oh, send the goods to DHL. We are sending the money to you. We have someone who is coming to US. Can you give the clothes to the person? And then sometimes you will sell it to them. And then it would get to 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the money wouldn't come. But I had one woman who, after she paid, she has been giving me a lot of customers. And then I realized that, okay, so whilst I was being patient with this woman, she was testing me. And now she could give me like a lot of clients that I don't even know them. She does the advertisement for me.
Oh, man.
They'll
that
call
is so
me and
beautiful.
They'll be like, oh, this woman is saying you sell good goods and all that stuff. Meanwhile, I don't even know the woman in person.
That is so amazing. I'm interested to know, what drives you when things are quiet or when they're hard?
Let me say God.
Okay.
Because he is one person. Sometimes I sit down, I have a book that I talk to God and I write the questions that I ask him. And I'll be waiting for answers to write it against them. So when things go down, I cry to him and then we talk about it. And then sometimes he paves way that I never expect.
Has there ever been a moment when you wanted to quit?
No.
No?
No, not at all.
And why is that? You must have a very strong why.
I think that I have said to myself that if I want to do something, I don't want to go back. So when I look at the ups and downs, I still feel that there are more days ahead. Things are going to be better.
Yeah.
And it keeps me going.
Yeah. And how do you handle comparison, especially in the fashion world?
It's not easy because sometimes a client will call you for a fabric, and then when she asks the price, she'll tell you that, oh, I asked this woman. This woman is saying 3,000.
Oh, no.
Why are you saying 2,000? Then yours is inferior.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I want it to be a little cheaper so that people can patronize. But she feels that the one that has higher price is quality than mine.
Mm.
Sometimes it brings me down, but I feel that it's all part of the business. So I just let it go, yeah.
Yeah. Susanna, how do you ensure that your business benefits the communities you are sourcing from?
I pay my taxes.
I love that.
That's one. I don't joke with it.
Yeah.
I pay my taxes. I make sure that I have employees that are lead. At the end of the month, I could pay them for them to also survive.
Mm.
And I think that alone, it's okay for me now, for my business. Mm. As time goes on, when I expand it, I'll employ a lot of people.
Yeah. And are there women or young people you've mentored through your work?
Yes. I have a lot of students that I have taught them, fascinators and bridal fans and other things. And they are working with them. And when I see their works online, I feel so proud of myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
And speaking of the people you mentor, have you had mentors on this journey? Because business is different to having a salaried job. So are there people who you look up to, maybe coaches or mentors who've helped you on this journey?
Yeah. I have one woman that I have been admiring, and I have been learning from her secretly. I have not told her personally, but
sometimes
I look at her works, and then I draw a lot of lessons from her works, and I add it to mine.
Mm.
Yeah.
How do you want people to feel when they wear Adi Shefie?
I want them to feel like a royal.
Ah.
Because God has purchased us with his blood, and he makes us, everyone, royal. And so when you wear my fabric, it means that automatically you are a royal.
Mm.
You walk with your shoulders high. I think nothing is happening to you because you are royal. Yeah.
Now I want us to talk business because you are an entrepreneur, and I want us to get into the nitty gritties. How has your business evolved from when you first started?
So when I first started, I was selling the goods in my room.
Mm.
In my room and then on my WhatsApp status. But now I have a shop by God's grace.
Yeah.
And the people do walk in. I also do online, adding up to it. And I think that it's growing small.
Mm. What are some business mistakes you see people in the fashion industry make that you wish you could stand on a rooftop and shout for them not to make?
Please, can you come again?
What business mistakes are you seeing people in the fashion industry, perhaps trying to do what you are doing, making, that if you had the opportunity to stand on a rooftop and say, yay, don't do that, you would absolutely grab it with both hands?
How people cost their fabrics.
Okay.
Sometimes you could see a fabric that you sell it around 700 and then someone will be selling around 2,000. I see it and I'd be like, oh, this person, won't that person go to heaven? Like, it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all part of the business.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just look at them and then I go my way.
And how should they be costing? Maybe let's get practical.
Okay, so assuming that the weaver weaved the fabric for me, and then the weaving and then the thread costs like 500 cedis.
Mm.
It means that if I am selling it, I can sell it like 600 at least. I'll get 100 out of it. The 100, I'll use parts to do the joining, and the joining costs like 20 cedis. So out of it, you can get like 80 cedis, which is okay.
Mm.
But some will sell it like 1,000, 1,002, meaning that they have profits like a multiple of what the weaver took.
Mm.
I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
Yeah. And most people think that those that are of higher prices are the quality ones. That's what they think. Yeah.
And what systems or structures have changed the game for you 7 years in?
Hello?
What systems and structures have you put in place that you think are putting you in good stead 7 years into running your company now?
I think that the team that I work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them, they put me on my toes because sometimes I go for night shifts a lot and then I'll come to the shop looking very tired, but they still work for me. And so it makes things look like I am even there.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you about the top three things that have helped you grow. And it sounds like one of those is your team, right? They're the ones that are that are helping you see the expansion of the business. But what other two things do you believe are helping you get to where you are and perhaps even scaling to a bigger operation?
I think that's two is consistency. Because I always want to have goods for people to purchase. And then now I have other traditional accessories that I sell. And so sometimes people call me from other regions. I go and dress them for their traditional locations. So people will see me. And then later you see people calling me. I'm in Eastern region. I'm in Greater Accra. I want to come and work for me.
Yeah.
And I think that one also is selling me out. Yeah.
And why is it important for you to build something that is rooted in Ghanaian identity?
Please, can you come again?
Why is it important for you to build something rooted in Ghanaian identity? Suzanne, Hello? Are you there?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I was asking why it's so important for you that you're building something that is so deeply rooted in your Ghanaian identity.
Well, I feel that I want to learn about my culture, my traditions. And so as I work on them, I get to know history about them. And then I tend to teach other people as well.
And yeah.
And then I portray to other people who are in different countries as well.
And how do you see African fashion contributing to global conversations? Firstly, about creativity and then about our identity as Africans.
For now, I feel that Africans, we are pushing harder. Because recently, I think the president of Eswatini was in Ghana. And then when he was gifted kente, he was so happy. So I realized that, oh, wow, so Ghana, we have certain things that other people would want to have as in their possession. And I was really happy. So I feel that we are supposed to be on our toes. We are to push harder. We have a lot of things that we can do for other people to see our traditions and our cultures. Yeah.
And before we can have a conversation with others about our culture and our identity, it's important that we do learn as well. And I'm happy that that is what you are doing through your business. And what have you learned so far? What are the things that you've learned about your culture that you perhaps didn't know and surprised you, but that you did and got re-emphasized?
So how we put on our clothes, the meanings of some clothes, the names of some fabrics. I have learned a lot of them and I'm still learning.
And I can imagine because, so I don't even know, I'm part Zulu, part Swati. And I was learning not too long ago that you can be wearing the same cloth, but you wear it differently depending on whether you are married or unmarried. There are certain things that you don't put on if you are a maiden versus if you have been married. So there's just a whole lot of things that go into culture that if you don't immerse yourself and you don't take the time to learn, you'll never know. And you end up maybe misappropriating or even disrespecting the people and the culture itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very true.
What legacy are you trying to leave behind through this brand that you're building?
So I want the new generations coming to know that we have beautiful cultures.
Yeah.
And you can't just throw them away. We have to learn them. We are in a modern era, but we still have to embrace our traditions and our cultures.
Mm.
And then I think those ones, I am trying to learn and then teach them as well.
Mm.
So there are most of my learners, when they come to my shop, I will tell them, this cloth, this is the name of the cloth.
Yeah.
If you see someone putting it on, this is the name, this is the meaning. So that at least the person will know that, okay, this cloth, this is the meaning.
Mm.
And the next time I will ask the person and then she will say it perfectly, means that they are also ready to learn.
Yes.
If we all teach our generations, their traditions and cultures will not fade away.
Mm.
They will still maintain in our culture.
I love that because when we think about fashion a lot, we think about trends. So something that is fashionable today may not necessarily be fashionable tomorrow. But more than trends, what you are thinking about or your approach to the fashion business and the industry is a preservation of culture. I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any plans to expand into new products or countries or experiences, perhaps?
Yeah. So now I want to enter into hair kits,
okay,
like saloon items and all those stuff, but I don't really have a supplier now. I am thinking of getting someone in China who would be doing the supply for me and all those stuff.
Mm.
I think I want to add another business to what I do.
Yeah. So apart from the cousin you mentioned who sews and puts fabrics together, do you have any intention to actually sell clothes using the fabrics?
Yes, I have started learning.
Okay.
Yeah, I've started learning from her. Small, I think. And by God's grace, I'll get there.
Yeah. And who would be a dream client or a dream collaboration for you in terms of the brand you currently have and are building?
Please, can you come again?
Who would be your ideal or dream client or collaboration?
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me, Susanna?
Hello? It's raining here, so...
Oh! Do you need me to be louder, or is the network the issue?
I think it's the network issue. Please, can you come again?
All right. Now, what I was asking is, because now we are wrapping up the conversation and we're looking to what's next for the collections, right? So who would your dream client or collaboration be when you think about... The dream partnership, who is it or what comes to mind?
Oh, any fashion designer who is ready to work with me.
Yeah.
I would love to work with that person.
Yeah.
Not in Ghana alone, but outside the country. Anyone who wants to venture into selling Ghanaian fabrics like kente, I would love to work with such people.
Mm.
Yeah.
You keep mentioning kente so much, and I'd love for you to give us a bit of some cultural education. What is it? What is its significance? Who gets to wear it? And what does it really mean?
Kente is the cloth that we put on. That's our traditional cloth.
Okay.
We call it kente.
Yes.
Yeah. When you look at my DP, I have some there.
I do see it.
Yeah. Everyone can put it on
because
it is our traditional cloth. Yeah.
So I'm now thinking about the Swati culture, and we've got a fabric that we call ibayi, and ibayi can come in different colors. It can come in different patterns.
It's
so,
the same.
I hear you. And so people can do with the fabric whatever, but at the end of the day, it is ibayi, and I guess kente for you guys.
Yeah, yes, that's it.
10 years from now, let's future pace. 10 years from now, what does your brand look like? Who is wearing it? What is the buzz? What is the headline where Adichie Efie Collections is concerned?
So 10 years to come, I want to have shops in different regions outside the country. And then I'll be seeing you wearing kente.
Yes.
And then you're telling me about that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Any other aspirations outside of that? The thing that you wish God can really pull through for you?
I am just looking for a lot of designers who'd want to work with me so that I'll be supplying them with the fabrics and then they will be doing the designing themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we end the conversation, what has been your most satisfying moment in business?
When a customer sent me a reply, thank you so much for the cloth.
Yeah.
It's nice. When I see such messages, like I smile to myself and I say, oh, you have done well.
Mm-hmm. And where do people get a hold? Yeah. Fans, yeah.
They keep me going. Yeah.
Mm. Where do people get ahead of your fabric, a hold of your fabric rather?
Sorry?
Where do people get a hold of you and your fabric if they want to try it out and channel their inner Ghanaian?
So I'm on Instagram at Adichie Fear Collections. I'm on TikTok, Adichie Fear Collections. And then I also have a shop located at Boshine Station in Kumasi.
Mm.
Yeah, yes, please.
I need us to spell this Adichie Fear because it's not what people are thinking. It is A-D-E-H-Y-I-E-F-I-E.
Yes.
I mean, at the end of this, I need a certificate to say I am deep within Ghana now. Because what do you mean? I've been getting it right this whole time.
I'll give you a Ghana card.
Thank you. Or maybe a fabric. Now I'm like those aunties who want a fabric for free.
in fact, you have a fabric with me. You have to come for it.
Yay! I love that. Absolutely love that.
Just by spelling the name correctly, you have won a fabric for me. I will give you beautiful kente.
Praise the Lord. I absolutely love that. Any advice for someone who wants to get into the fashion industry but is really scared because they don't feel like they measure up or they don't know enough about the industry to make an impact? What would you say to that person as we bid you farewell?
Build a trusting team.
Mm.
And then you always pray that you meet good clients as well. And then you always put on a smiling face. You embrace clients. You treat everyone equally. And it will keep you going small.
Mm. You know what I appreciate about what you're saying is that actually you don't have to know everything. You don't have to do everything. Get the people who who do it well, and partner with them.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I love that. Any final words before we let you go?
Well, I want to say thank you so much for this great opportunity. I'm so grateful. And then I want to say hi to my listeners. I love you all. Thank you so much. And then I have one person who has been helping me with my brand. His name is Darrell.
Yeah.
And I want to say hello to him and then to my beautiful family and friends for the support. Thank you very much.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Having a grateful spirit and acknowledging the people that have been helping you on the journey. That is so amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation. You know, for me, what it did is really, it cemented that entrepreneurship rooted in culture is absolutely not a business. And I know in the beginning you were like, yes, it is for the money. I wanted to make money. But it's an act of preservation, like I kept saying. It's empowerment for those who actually do the work alongside you, as well as transformation. And I think what Adichie Fear Collection stands for is a living legacy of heritage that is turned into opportunity and art that is turned into impact. And I really appreciate that you came and you had this conversation with us, and people who are listening have actually just got a call to their purpose, to their roots, to their story, because all of those are very, very powerful currencies. And if people were as prideful or about their culture, their heritage, I think we'd see more of the African story being told with pride and being told in the right places, in the right way. Because it's so scary how in this day and age, people still have misconceptions about us. People don't know about our culture. And I think the onus is on us to let people know what our culture is and what it stands for and represents. And I think you are doing that so incredibly well. And so thank you for leading the charge with so much heart and with so much heritage. You are a national and continental treasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.